Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode 201 of Unblocking Crypto. Al, good to see you.
Good to see you, Jason.
Man, we got some big news this week. I mean, I know price hasn't been great, but Vanguard has now said that they are going to allow both ETFs and mutual funds that primarily hold cryptocurrencies to be traded in this platform. So this is huge, right? I mean, back in August of 24, their CEO said it wasn't going to happen, but there's been so much demand from retail and institutional clients that this decision has been somewhat overturned. And if you look at Vanguard, it's 50 million customers, $11 trillion of assets. That's a lot, right? They're the number two guy behind BlackRock. So this is amazing news.
Totally agree. I think two thoughts on this. One, this fits the Bitcoin is gunpowder mentality of you can choose not to adopt Bitcoin, but your competitors will. And then you get a choice to whether you adopt it or they crush you. So I think Vanguard tried to avoid using gunpowder for their military, and they realized they're not competitive, and so they had to pivot. So that's the one thought, and I think that occurs for individuals, for companies, and countries. And then the other one is, I think the first day when they went live, Bybit's volume hit like $1 billion in the first 30 minutes. If I remember those numbers correctly, it was something like that, like kind of like it was on the, you know, early days of the ETF when the volume was through the roof. So I think Vanguard was correct in allowing its customers to engage in Bitcoin ETFs.
Yeah, and they're not the only ones, too. I mean, Bank of America just made an announcement, too, that they're going to allow all their Merrill and Merrill Edge clients to allocate between 1% and 4% of their portfolios to crypto. So they're going to include the spot Bitcoin ETFs from BlackRock, Bitwise, Fidelity, and Grayscale starting on January 5th. And they're going to stop this whole long-standing policy they had preventing their 15,000-plus advisors from proactively recommending crypto products. So I think we're going to see another inflow in early January, kind of that same way that just happened with Vanguard.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this one because I have a member of my in-law family that I'll see around Christmas. It has been at Merrill Lynch for like 40 years. So I'm curious to see what he has to say, since everybody over there knows my position on Bitcoin.
Yeah, so speaking of Bitcoin, I mean, it went above 92 over the weekend. That's probably hovering right around 90 right now. I did see Bernstein kind of came out and said that the four-year cycle is broken. They raised their 2026 target for Bernstein did to 150 grand and said the cycle is going to peak in 27 at 200 grand. They still maintain their long-term projection of $1 million per Bitcoin by 2033. And even JP Morgan is saying they're targeting Bitcoin to be 170K over the next 6 to 12 months. So there's still a lot of bullish sentiment, even though people think that the four-year cycle means that we're in for another 2 years of bear.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's growing more clear that the four-year cycle is not it's not happening the way it's usually has happened. And so I'm kind of just looking at, are we building a foundation here in the, you know, $90,000 range? And what's the next leg? If it's a leg up back into that $100,000 to $120,000 range, that's bullish. If it's a leg down, then that's who knows what's going to happen. But I just can't say. I mean, we just added Vanguard, Merrill Lynch, Harvard's pension or Harvard's endowment, all these pension funds, all these countries, all these like big players are opening up to Bitcoin. The sellers, you get to sell it once to these guys, right? They're not trading these coins. They're holding them. And so, you know, Bitcoin's scarcity model should mean that over time, the price is going to go up if you're selling to these long-term holders, because they're not just dumping more into the market. So sometimes you're into Bitcoin for a long time and then you're just nonstop bullish all the time. And you kind of feel like, okay, now I'm more of an evangelist than like a logical thinker. I'm like, it's so hard for me to convince myself that this thing's going to go down from here in any long-term or major way. So the option is that it's going to go up. And so I think that's my theory. I don't know what that looks like. It looks very different. The chart looks wildly different than it used to. So, like, that's new. But what's consistent is that it mostly goes up over time.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the percentage of chance of a rate being cut by the Fed tomorrow is at like 90%. So, which that percentage of chance has fluctuated quite rapidly over the past month. And even Kevin Hassett is trending in terms of most likely to become the next potential Fed chair. And he is definitely more of a Trump ally that believes that we should be lowering the rates to make money cheaper for everything. So, and even shoot, Myriad, one of the prediction companies, their chances of a crypto winner have gone from 30% down to 9% in less than a week since that just came up. So they're still called the herd is getting less and less optimistic on a crypto winner actually happening.
Yeah, I think that we might be in it. It certainly feels more like winter and feels more like a bottom than it feels like a bull run with a correction. I mean, sentiment's in the tank. The fear and greed index is like under 20 for a long time. But on the flip side, you're hearing nothing but good news, but the price isn't going up. That's bear behavior, right? If you hear a little bit of good news and the price goes up, that's bullish. You know, like we've seen that. Elon Musk says SpaceX or Tesla might sell Teslas in Bitcoin and the price jumps 15% in a day in 2021. Like that's a bull market. Here, Vanguard opens up. Merrill Lynch says they're going to open up in a month. All this other good news and the price stays flat or the price just continues to chop along. That's not bullish markets behavior. So the rate cut, 90% chance of a rate cut, that ought to have an impact on the price. The Treasury just had the largest, basically, I guess the Fed bought the most treasuries it's ever bought in an auction. That's liquidity, right? This quantitative tightening ended at the end of November, and now we're a week and a half into December, and we're setting records for the amount of money that the Fed's putting into the market by buying treasuries. Like all of these things should have an impact on the market, on the Bitcoin price if we were in a bull market, and it's not. So we're not in a bull market. If this is the bottom or this is something, even if this is 20% off the bottom, right? Even if we could sniff down to like the 80s or like to 80. Okay. Like that's crazy low. And if 80 is crazy low, but 150, 170, 180 is like very reasonable, right? I mean, it's with all of these new buyers in the market, the sellers are going to run out of Bitcoin to sell. So the price has to go up over some length of time. So it's just, we're in a weird spot now. Like if Bitcoin can't go up in this market, I don't know what can. Like real estate, probably not. Gold's up. It could go up farther because it's got China buying more gold than it's ever bought before. It's these sovereign wealth funds buying more. So, you know, you could see that go up some. I mean, it's high and going up. I mean, you know, real estate stocks, you know, with AI, stocks are it's a stock picking game. It's tough to invest. I mean, you invest in the S&P 500 and 493 of them go down and seven of them hold the weight. Like that's not great. So I don't know where we go from here, but if we go down, I can't imagine we go down in a big way.
Well, when you talk about some of the positive news, the other thing that I was reading too about Indiana, so they just have a new proposal that would let the state invest in digital assets like Bitcoin, the regulated funds, and they would also block local governments from restricting crypto companies. So, I mean, this is exciting to see where it's getting filtered down to the state level. And we've been talking about this for a while and expecting a lot of it to happen. And it's been what, three states, I think, that have really embraced Bitcoin. And we're starting to see a couple other people follow along, right? It's happening. It's just not happening as fast as everybody thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you had Texas just buy $10 million worth of Bitcoin for the first ever state purchase of Bitcoin. And then Indiana cuts loose and gets more Bitcoin friendly. So, you know, we'll get there, but it does. I mean, it's slow. It's all, everything's always slower than you think.
Well, speaking of slow, so the Genius Bill, which was passed back in July into law, right? I think the House Financial Services Committee had an update hearing to try to get some insight from the FDIC and the Federal Reserve and the OCC and the National Credit Union Administration on how they were going to move forward. The deadline they have to, I guess, get this going on their end is July 18th of 2026, which to me is kind of crazy that it's been almost, 5 months and we haven't really seen much. And now they have another 7 months and apparently a lot's going to happen. The FDIC did come out and say, their acting chair, Travis Hill, said the agency is planning proposed rules this month to establish a framework for implementing the Genius Act. So we're getting close to seeing something out of government. What that means, still no idea. I don't really know if the Federal Reserve or anybody else is doing much. They've all pretty much said they have another 7 months, so they expect to be able to get it done in another 7 months.
Color me not optimistic on governments getting anything done. 7 months is no time, and July is getting close to midterms, so I'm not optimistic.
Oh, yeah, I was reading about the Clarity Act, too, and I think there was the insight from one of the lawyers working on that was that the Senate negotiations are struggling to finalize that market structure bill. The main disputes are over stablecoin yield, conflicts of interest, and DeFi protections. And if he said if he was a betting man, he would not expect to see any sort of markup by year end. And this is really the same three things we've been talking about. The stablecoin yield is the banks fighting back. They don't want competition. I mean, the conflicts of interest is the Democrats saying they don't want the Trump family to have any sort of engagement in crypto and that would benefit them. And then the DeFi protections is they want to come after software developers and say, if you write something, that's not free speech. We want to hold you liable for what people are going to do with that software. So there's really no path forward that anybody can see right now, which sucks. So kind of to your point, I'm not optimistic about anything happening anytime soon. And I don't even know if it'll be midterms that'll change anything.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that could really change it, I think, would be banks finding a way to make more money on this and then cutting things loose, like cutting the politicians loose to pass something so that they can cash in on the stablecoin side. That's, to me, probably what's hanging it up. Whenever I'm in a contractual dispute, I don't like to just have one issue, because if you solve that issue, then your dispute's over and you got to be in agreement. So it's always better to have at least two, if not three, different items so that if one of them does get resolved, you still are kind of fighting on one or two more fronts. So we'll see. You know, it's just money. Like, and it depends on how long it takes banks to figure out how they're going to make their money.
Speaking of other government news, I did see the CFTC has just approved Bitnomial to be the first exchange to list regulator approved spot cryptocurrency products. So Caroline Pham pretty much called this moment a new golden age for innovation in America. The CEO of Bitnomial said they're bringing leveraged spot crypto trading back to the U.S. with CFTC oversight. So they're pretty excited about the CFTC being pro-business and really allowing regulated entities to utilize the full scope of statutory capabilities afforded under U.S. law. So, yeah, I mean, this is exciting to see. In the past, you had to go to Binance and everybody outside the U.S. to do this. And now with it being back in the U.S., not that I think it's the right thing for many people to do, but at least keep it in the U.S. and be able to handle it here.
Yeah, I agree with that. And not only that, at least it's something that's happening and not something they're talking about. So, you know, that actually makes a needle move. So I'll take that.
Quick break from the podcast to plug something I created. I've had the same conversation with a lot of people that were very curious about crypto. So if you are one of those ones that are curious about crypto, you want to know why it's growing, what it can do, how you can get involved, how you can protect yourself doing that, then this is for you. It's 43 plus videos that you can self-pace and you get access for forever. You get a 365-day money-back guarantee if you don't like it. The link is in the show notes, or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/curious. Back to the podcast.
Speaking of happening slash not happening, so the SEC opened up an investigation on Ondo, which was back under the Biden administration. Ondo is one of the companies that had tokenized a bunch of things, and the SEC just ended the investigation without recommending any charges. So this is super bullish news from a RWA perspective, especially how that their token doesn't fall under the U.S. security law. So it's exciting to see the SEC is done something, and it seems like the right decision. Maybe it took an administration change for that to happen, but that's awesome to see.
Yeah, I think something came across my feed that was talking about the tokenization of equities and how that's off the ground and there's tons of upside to it. So if this translates across to that, then we could see kind of the innovation and disruption in kind of the real world assets that we've been talking about for years now.
One of the companies that is getting more involved in that is Coinbase, and they had a recent announcement that their layer two called Base on Ethereum is now going to support Solana based assets natively. So, I mean, you're linking Base and Solana. They're doing this with Chainlink's CCIP. So, I mean, this is awesome news too. I mean, we've talked about it for a while that the way this moves forward is that all these chains are able to talk back and forth. But now you have an Ethereum based chain talking to a Solana based chain and two very big chains with a lot of interactivity. So this is great news and kind of positions Coinbase to become that everything app in terms of crypto that they're trying to be.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that's a big step for Coinbase.
How about stable coins? So I know Coinbase benefits from USDC, but the main company that owns USDC is Circle. They just partnered with Bybit. So Circle is the world's second largest stable coin owner. Bybit is the world's second largest crypto exchange. They are now joining forces so that they will hopefully have the impact over how digital assets move across the globe. And their Bybit, if you look at them in the past, they've primarily relied on Tether's USDT. Now they are going to spend more time and effort, including USDC, Circle stablecoin, into their exchange. So should help from a transparency and trust perspective, and it should help Circle quite a bit. I mean, if you look at Tether, Tether's way more than 2x the market value of Circle, so, or the coins are, the stable coins.
Yeah, and you know, Circle seems to me that they started USDC in order to be like a US regulated or at least a US friendly stable coin, where Tether was kind of always playing an international game. But now Tether's kind of being touted and put an effort in to be more of a US friendly stable coin. So I do think Circle probably needs to make some moves like this in order to play defense against what Tether's doing to come into the US. So, you know, it's kind of maybe the stable coin wars are starting, and this is part of it.
Yeah, PayPal's trying to get in the mix. Their stable coin value has surged 224% in the past 3 months. So they're just under $4 billion. They're the sixth biggest stablecoin right after World Liberty's USD1, which is kind of funny, right? But I think a lot of the DeFi adoption incentives are helping to drive this growth. And the weird part is Athena is one of the largest holders of their PayPal stablecoin, and Athena is the one that just lost a peg. Right? So yeah, not really sure what's going on with that one, but I mean, PayPal knew they wanted to get into this game, and they're slowly moving up the leaderboard on their end.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, this to me kind of shows you the power of the network effect. You know, PayPal having a payment network and just being able to transport some of that or leverage that network into stablecoins and being the sixth largest stablecoin without being a stablecoin company, without having to push anything, but really just using it their organic network to grow. The network effect's really important in a digital world or internet native economy. So that's, you know, if you're Western Union, you should be paying attention, right?
We'll talk about Western Union in a second, but I guess the one other thing that just got announced, so Stable, which is that dedicated stable and payments layer one blockchain, Bitfinex is the one that backed it. It's powered by Tether. They just launched, and I think it went pretty well. They announced some partnerships with institutions and payment-focused firms like Anchorage Digital, PayPal, and Standard Charter's tokenization platform as well. So we're starting to see more from that. The other big thing was Western Union, and they had announced their payment token USDPT or something like that back in October. It's going to be on Solana. I think Anchorage Digital was going to hold it. It's expected to launch probably in the first half of 2026. So they have some positive news around that. They've just prepared to roll out what they're calling a stable card. And it's aimed at the consumers in markets with high inflations. I mean, look at Argentina, right, where the inflation was 250 to 300% last year. So this card is going to be connected to the company's most likely partnership with Rain, which is a stablecoin payments infrastructure firm that Visa cards are linked to. And that this would allow users to convert stablecoins held in Rain-powered wallets into local cash payouts at participating Western Union locations. So if you send your money from the U.S. to Argentina, you can keep it in a stablecoin until you need it. And because if you wait a month or so to use it, it could get cut in almost half, right? So this will be really interesting to see if Western Union now has their whole network that people are using and keeping the money on for all their customers.
Yeah, I think this is maybe in the last few months, it's the first time we've seen Western Union really crank things up. And then in this, it's like they're actually trying to understand their customers and why their customers are going to stablecoins and what they can do in order to, you know, act like a company should act when they're under attack from a competitor. And something like this makes sense, right? I mean, it's they can leverage their existing infrastructure and brick and mortar stuff, you know, without having to give up market share to somebody else. So I think citizens that are in countries that have hyperinflation are getting an advantage of it. And I think your business can profit from it. That's pretty much how it's supposed to work. So, you know, you create win-wins, and that's how businesses really take off. So good on Western Union for being at least more nimble than some of these companies.
One of their competitors, MoneyGram, and MoneyGram's, I mean, they're a pretty large company too. They serve like 50 million customers a year across more than 200 territories. They just tap Fireblocks, provide stablecoin infrastructure and a programmable settlement layer. So to enhance payment flows. So they're jumping into this whole stablecoin game as well.
Yep. I mean, you don't have a choice. I mean, look at Vanguard. Once Vanguard falls, like, I wouldn't be surprised now, if Western Union, MoneyGram, maybe not, but like everybody's going to be paying attention because the guy that said, no, we're never going to get into this, just got into it. So that kind of opens up everybody going, well, Vanguard did it. So, you know, we've taken this position for the last 5 years, but maybe it's time for us to change our position. So I think we'll see more and more things happen like that. I mean, every day, we had a whole week, every week we're just rattling off things, companies that are adopting in different ways, whether it's stablecoins or crypto or Bitcoin. So, you know, these guys are nothing, there's nobody asleep at the wheel at the top of a company, especially if they're public.
Yeah, I mean, so the other big news that I saw too, so Ubit is a Tether-backed mobile payments app. They just partnered with Bakkt to launch in the US on Monday. So now they can operate across all 50 states. They have a tap-to-pay solution that integrates with all your non-custodial wallets like Base, Binance, MetaMask, Platform, Trust Wallet. It allows users to make purchases from Apple and Android devices, and the merchants receive instant fiat payouts through the existing Visa rails. So this is, I mean, they called it one of the most significant global expansion milestones to date and introduces a payment experience Americans have never had until now. So real crypto payments from the wallets they already use. And that'll be exciting to see if it actually gets any usage. Right? But I'm excited that it's happening. And it's, I mean, Tether's making a ton of investments into a lot of companies, and now the U.S. is actually getting to see some of it too.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the attack vectors or one of the negative narrative, you know, angles that it gets taken is like, oh, what's the use case? Oh, we don't really need it. It's like, okay, for guys like us, there's a lot of theoretical use cases that are not actually adopted yet. You got to go through the process of, you know, store value, and you got to have the people understand that it's valuable. And I mean, you're talking to a guy that held onto his BlackBerry because I liked having the buttons on the keyboard, right? And I'm pretty open to making changes when they make sense. So like, I was slow by at least 18 to 24 months on adopting the iPhone because of the physical buttons on the BlackBerry. You're talking about messing with people's money. Like, yeah. It's going to take a while. And so, you know, this, oh man, what good is it? I mean, and of course, in America, you don't need, you know, you've got the cleanest dirty shirt in the US dollar. So you're not dying for new money. But if you're really thinking about it and you open things up, it's like, man, look at all the reasons why this would work. Look at all the use cases that are out there. Some people need to actually see them straight up, not talk to me about why it might be useful or, well, here's the stage that's set for use cases to occur. The more things where you can actually do concrete things, especially if you're sliding it in using existing wallets or digital or this, or like bring up using people's login at Wells Fargo or Bank of America to see and use crypto, whether it's stablecoins, Bitcoin. That's where the people that are like, oh, there's no use case, are like, oh, maybe the people that kept arguing me about use cases were right, and there are use cases, they just aren't being used because it's a new industry that hasn't got the network effect. It's not ingrained into the legacy rails, and it's just working its way through that. So long story short, I think I'm right. I think the use cases are there, and I think that once they are used, then people will be like, oh, this is better, I like it better, the transaction costs are less, the finality is quicker. I think that the benefits are there. And even in America, where the dollar's, you know, not as bad as what you see in other currencies.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of the ETFs, because there's some benefits that some of the ETF people haven't seen in the past. And one is like staking on Ethereum. BlackRock just filed an S-1 to have their Ethereum staking ETF, right? So that's kind of a big deal. I'll be intrigued to see what happens. I think the newest ETF they're going to call is ETFB. It would track the returns of Ethereum and add rewards from the portion of the token holdings that are staked. So, I mean, if you look at BlackRock, they have the most successful ETFs in history with their Bitcoin and Ethereum ETFs, and now they're adding a staking version of that.
Yeah, and I think, if you want to talk about ease of discussion, an ETF that kicks out a dividend, I mean, most people don't have any clue how ETFs kick out dividends. Most people don't understand how a single company, if you buy the stock, it kicks out a dividend. So why would they really have to figure out staking if it's like, hey, this crypto ETF provides a dividend? So I think that ETF will be successful.
Speaking of ETFs that were successful, XRP ETFs actually have been pretty successful. And during all this craziness, they had 13 consecutive days in a row of net inflows since they launched. I think the last day I saw was they had about $50 million in new capital, which their now total net inflow is $874 million. So they're getting close to that $1 billion of assets under management. And they're probably, I mean, if they do this under a month, that might be one of the fastest growing crypto asset vehicles that we've seen in a while.
Pretty amazing, because I feel like XRP is an apple to the stablecoin orange, and stablecoins have so many advantages, including legislation and regulation. So, okay, I have zero XRP. I'm not anti XRP, but I just don't get it.
Yeah, Solana is another one we've been talking a lot about from an ETF perspective. They just had their third outflow. They had gone quite a while with no outflows, but their third one has been the largest as well. And they started back in, like, I think it was October 28th. So they just had like a $32 million outflow. I think that's actually, maybe it's just the 21 shares one. So it's all about $41 million in total. So Solana's coming back to earth.
Yeah, at the same time, $41 million is peanuts these days.
Yeah.
So I like that. Yes, that's an outflow, but as far as like grand scale concerns, it's not like, oh, it's on the way to being over. It's you know, if reshuffling this, but we're in December, so you got people, whether they're loss harvesting and taking some gains and offsetting the losses, or who knows, man. And that feels like noise, not signal. 32 million in outflows over a period of times, whatever. Solana, I'm not a big Solana guy either, but at least they have, at least they're in a fight with Ethereum for something similar, unlike XRP, that's the only guy that's up against a stablecoin industry. So I don't know, that didn't move the needle for me, but I'm bullish on crypto right now.
Yeah, the other big news from a crypto ETF perspective is Grayscale converted their Chainlink private chest over to an ETF. So, which they've been doing a lot of those, right? But what was interesting is that first day that it debuted, they had about almost 2 million shares traded, which was far above their average of about 42,000. So there's definitely a lot of interest on Link ETF now, kid.
Yeah, that's no surprise. I feel like you still get a bump for these crypto ETF releases.
And then we did see a bunch of leverage exposure to some ETFs. So 21 shares did a leveraged exposure to SLE. Rex and Tuttle have now done leveraged for XRP and Solana. So those people that want the leveraged on those, they have them. I'm not sure why many people are going to use it, but it's there now.
Yeah, I mean, leverage, be careful with leverage. Right. I'm no Dave Ramsey, but if you have leveraged exposure to crypto, which is like kind of high vol, high risk, high vol, more risk, you need to have a long period of time that you can stay in the market.
Speaking of somewhat of a leverage exposure to Bitcoin, let's talk about some of the digital asset treasuries. Strategy made some big news. They bought almost $1 billion of Bitcoin. I think it was $963 million, 10,624 Bitcoin. They now hold 660,624. So I think most of that came from at the money shares of their MSTR stock, although they had some from the STRD stock. And I think they have a little bit still left over. What was interesting is I did read that they have their unused at the market capacity is about $13.5 billion in common stock and almost double that in the preferred and structured offerings. So kind of interesting. And Michael Saylor has been in the news quite a bit here recently. I think they're over in the Middle East at one of those conferences. And he was talking about how he's been meeting with all the sovereign wealth funds and everybody else over there. And they're all super excited to move forward with Bitcoin.
Yeah. And so this is where Strategy and historically buys at the top, and whenever there's a dip, they're just kind of trickling in based on what they've got. So I view this as kind of a significant move because they dipped into the common stock ATM for a big number, close to $1 billion, while the price, in my view, maybe their view, is down and their MNAV is down, right? So they're kind of like, they're going against the grain a little bit here in order to acquire some more Bitcoin, even though they already have 650,000 Bitcoin. So that's like a bit of a message for me. You know, if you look at their historically, their big buys aren't focused on like buying a dip. They buy tops a lot because it's easier for them to do it because there's more FOMO, there's more liquidity, there's more everything. So that's something. And I did hear that, you know, he's like, basically every Middle East sovereign wealth fund is either going to buy or buying Bitcoin. And again, why are we at 90,000? And why do we think that, you know, this, why does it feel like 90,000 sucks? I don't know.
Well, one of the other companies that we've been talking about for a while, 21, just had some positive news. So 21 and CEP, Cantor Equity Partners, they approved the combo of the two businesses. They're going to go public, I think, today as we're recording this. They hold about 42,000 Bitcoin in its reserve already, which is what, close to about 4 billion. So they're one of the largest ones now, according, but they're still way behind Strategy. So it'll be interesting. We've been talking about them getting into the mix, and they want to be number one. They want to be Strategy. And they got a long ways to go at this point, but it's going to be kind of intriguing to see what happens with them getting thrown in there and how quickly do they start to compete with Strategy? And I mean, really, BitMine is kind of the number two guy, even though it's Ethereum, but it'll be interesting to see how close that 21 can get to BitMine's total value here pretty soon, too.
No, I agree, man. And you got, so Strategy is right now the ceiling of what corporations can do as far as Bitcoin acquisition. Somebody's going to go after that, right? I mean, the nature of competitive people, which corporations are just people, is I don't want to be number two. I don't want to fight as hard as I can fight to get to be number two. They're going to try to take number one. So, I mean, you're at 660,000 Bitcoin now and still accumulating 10,000 Bitcoin in a week. So if there's one other person like Mallers or anybody else that says, all right, let's crank it up. Let's get serious. Let's chase Strategy. Like in an asset that's as small as Bitcoin, two players like that is enough to really move the market. So I'm just put me on the list. It's like everything else, man. That's why I'm bullish. If you just push this game theory over time, more companies are going to get into it. The only reason they wouldn't is if Bitcoin fails, which I'm already convinced it's not. So over time, more companies get in. More, the same on the sovereign wealth side and the same on the billionaire side. And even if the billionaires have their billionaire parties and they are, and one guy's talking about Bitcoin and nobody else is jumping in, 10 years from now, that billionaire party has all new younger faces because the older folks are either they've aged out or they're not around anymore. And those billions of dollars find their way into younger hands, and the younger hands are more open to Bitcoin. So, you know, especially in an inflationary environment, time sucks because everything goes up and basically it seems like it's worse. But then when you get into Bitcoin, you're like, yeah, time's all right. But the longer this thing goes, the more corporations are going to adopt it, the more ultra high net worthers are going to have access to it. And with the scarcity and the decreasing portion of Bitcoin that's issued into the market every day, the price goes up. And when the price goes up, you can actually beat the purchase power impact that you get from the inflation of the dollar. So yeah, the more the merrier. More people should be buying Bitcoin. And if like, okay, I'm a Bitcoiner, I've been in it for a long time, but these are public companies. Public companies are owned by people that buy shares of public companies. So you're getting people into the Bitcoin sphere, that you're not getting, you know, self-custody Bitcoin, but you're getting people out of the zero mentality and getting into it a little bit. And then you never know where that leads, right? This isn't the finish line for anything. We're just getting started. So let it rip.
Well, I don't know. BitMine does hold some Bitcoin, but mostly what they hold is Ethereum. They just bought another 150 million of Ethereum, which was just under 50,000, I think, Ethereum from a couple of different exchanges. What's interesting, I was reading about Tom Lee. He's still predicting Ethereum to go to between 7,000 and 9,000 by January of next year, which would be a huge change from where it is today. So yeah, Bitcoin, Ethereum, they both still have a lot of very big fans that are spending a lot of money because they believe things are going in the right direction at some point soon.
Okay. And Tom Lee is a notorious ultra bull through no matter what. So it's fun to listen to him when you're feeling down about things, because he's very optimistic. So that's right, par for the course for him.
So let's talk about some other countries around the world. I was reading about Argentina. Their central bank is examining some changes to its existing ban that prohibits banks from trading crypto and offering crypto-related services. If this happens, they're saying that the revisions could come as early as April of next year. So that'd be huge to have a country like Argentina all of a sudden have banks that are allowing for crypto exchanges.
I agree. Internationally, if banks in one country are paying attention to it, granted it's Argentina, so maybe you don't pay as much of attention to banks in Argentina or Venezuela and places like that. But banks in America use the U.S. dollar. They're not searching for solutions, right? Banks in Argentina are in a different position. So see how it goes. See what happens. I mean, that's the use case, right? Like to help people avoid the debasement of their currency. And so look, you got to try stuff. Let's try it.
Well, sticking to South America, I saw Colombia was in the news here recently too. There's a Colombian Bitcoin crypto mining company called Orb Energy. They just came out and revealed that they are paying about 2.5 cents per kilowatt hour of green biogas energy. But so that's, if you look at it, that's about 50% lower than what the North American average is for Bitcoin mining averages. And they are now doing almost 1,000 kilowatt hours at 100% renewable energy, an entirely off-grid Bitcoin container mining system. So this is really intriguing. They're using some methane gas, which is a byproduct of waste decomposition, and it poses some environmental challenges for landfills. So they're taking something that was a problem and turning it into something productive. And I'm hoping we're going to start to see more things like that pop up around the world as well.
Yeah, no-brainer stuff, man. I mean, you know, especially if you're like in a position to where it's like, hey, we can send some power to the grid, we can send some power to the miners, you know, we can be grid responsive to what the grid needs from an electron standpoint. I think you start to add another layer of benefit for Bitcoin adoption. And might as well talk about including like the burning of off gases instead of just releasing into the atmosphere, and the benefits that you have from an ozone standpoint, carbon equivalents and all that. So good, I'd say.
Yep. UAE has a bunch of stuff coming out of it right now. There's the Bitcoin MENA conference over there in Abu Dhabi. There are a handful of officials that have been pretty much coming out and really talking about that UAE is now really embracing a strategic embracing of Bitcoin as a core component of the future financial system. It's no longer merely a digital asset, but they now recognize it as a key pillar in modern financing. And central to this evolution is the role of mining, right? So they describe it as the beating heart that underpins the network strength, security, and continuity. And the other thing that's kind of big that you're seeing out of Abu Dhabi and UAE is that UAE is potentially going to become kind of the Wall Street of cryptocurrencies because of how business friendly their regulations and the growing crypto ecosystem is. And I know we were hoping the US would be that, but I think we're moving so slowly that we might not be that at the end of the day if somebody like UAE really wants to do this.
Yeah. And you know me, man, I try to check my biases, but I'm an American, so I'm super biased there. If a country says we want to be the Wall Street of crypto, Wall Street's in America, and I think that America, whether it's a government thing or a financier thing or corporation thing, I think that's kind of fighting words, and you know, we're Wall Street. So
yeah,
if anything might make me believe that America could get its wheels rolling, it is becoming second or third place and other countries basically saying, we gotcha. And I think that's when America kind of steps up, you know. I don't know that that comment is the Pearl Harbor moment for American crypto involvement, but there will be one like that if America doesn't take the lead and someone else does and they start lobbing grenades at us, verbal or otherwise, then America responds typically like a sledgehammer to a finishing nail.
Oh, I mean, well, the kind of the whole beating Russia to the moon type of thing, right? So I would like to think we needed a challenge and maybe this could help, because it feels like we are slowing way down right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to joke about, yeah, if we went to the moon, but that's a great point, right? It looks like we're falling behind. So we not only do we need to do the next thing, we need to absolutely obliterate the competition's morale and basically force them to quit by overachieving. So that's typically the kind of how things roll. America, you figure out what needs to be done in order to kind of retain dominance, and then you drop two bombs on small towns in Japan, and then the game's over. So
then you have earned yourself decades of dominance globally, and so it matters, and that's not right or wrong, I guess. It's the way it works. And it's until I see otherwise, that's the way it's going to work.
Yeah, so to close the loop on the Abu Dhabi stuff, I know one of the other things that I were talking a lot about mining, there was a company over there, MicroBT, that has done a lot of mining hardware. And what's interesting is their mining devices they've just come out with have had some pretty interesting power efficiencies. So they're down between 14.5 to 12.5 joules per terahash, which if you look at this, the high end of most of these have been in that 25 to 30 ish joules per hash. And 5 years ago, it was 90 to 100 joules per terahash. So these efficiencies are coming way down, and it's going to enable a lot of this off-grid stuff to happen because it won't be so freaking power hungry to be able to mine Bitcoin. So it's exciting to see that that's happening and heading in the right direction. And we'll see where it kind of goes from here.
Yeah, you know, heading in the right direction is good.
India was in the news too, /Coinbase, right? Coinbase has resumed onboarding users in India after more than 2 years of not doing it, since it pulled out due to some regulatory hurdles. Shoot, we talked about this from India for quite a while. They're so big into crypto and they've been fighting it so hard, which kind of surprises me. I think right now they can only trade between cryptocurrencies, but they'll be able to fully on-ramp fiat expected early next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's great that we have something positive to say about India, because most of the time we don't say anything. And then when we do talk about them, it's usually not positive. So put it on the list of things I don't understand. I mean, India is so tech forward, and this, you know, Bitcoin and crypto in general is an opportunity for countries that, you know, they try the industrializing thing. They try all these different things, but digital allows you to catapult yourself ahead of all that. Why not? Why not go for it? So, yeah, I mean, India, they have a ton of people, and from what I've seen, they could handle some prosperity.
Yeah, the other country that I saw too was Indonesia, and Robinhood is planning to buy an Indonesian brokerage over there so that they can help with getting crypto more involved in Indonesia space. I think the approvals and closing are expected to happen in the first half of next year. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see more countries like Indonesia getting involved with a company like Robinhood.
Yeah, I mean, Robinhood's crushing it, basically. So the only place to go is to add new countries. I mean, it's kind of easier and cheap to go after the countries where you're kind of easily adopted or the regulatory environment's good for you. And instead of trying to squeeze market share out of Schwab and all these other guys and countries you're already in, you got to go find new money from new countries, and that's part of it.
South Korea was in the news here recently too. We've talked about them quite a bit. We're surprising they're not kind of leading the world in crypto in general. The ruling Democratic Party over there is apparently pushing the Financial Services Commission to submit the stablecoin bill by, I think, tomorrow, the 10th of December. And they're pretty much telling the commission that if they want to pass this bill into law by January, and if they don't do it, they're going to come up with their own version of it and pass it and force them to happen. So, I mean, it's surprising that South Korea is not leading the charge in a lot of this stuff. And now it seems like the ruling party over there is trying to force this to happen.
And that's the way this works, right? People fight it. And then one side's like, look, you got to get it done. I mean, eventually things get done. Maybe it isn't this time, maybe it's next time, whatever. But like, mounting pressure eventually gets released into action. And that's part of what this is.
So let's jump over to Europe. UK actually had some pretty decent news, although it's still hard to understand what it really means. But the last week on the UK just passed a law that recognizes digital assets as a third kind of property. So this gives crypto kind of a clear legal footing in related crimes or litigation, although it doesn't really say how. So I'll be intrigued to see what this turns into, but at least they are recognizing crypto as property, which is a big step forward for what's been happening in the UK here lately.
And honestly, coming up with a third type or a new type of property makes sense. Yep. The United States hasn't done that. They kind of are trying to shoehorn it into existing legislation that covers real property. So that's good for the UK for doing something right. They seem like they're off the rails.
So sticking in Europe, Italy, their financial regulator just reminded all the crypto firms and investors to pay close attention to this December 30th deadline for complying with the EU's MiCA rules. So all the virtual asset service providers can only operate until December 30th unless they apply to become the crypto asset service providers. So it'll be intriguing to see what happens by here at the end of the year and where things go. I mean, what's crazy is if you look at another country nearby, Poland, their parliament fell 18 votes short of the 3/5 majority, and they needed to override the president's veto of the Crypto Asset Market Act. So now they become kind of the only EU member that doesn't have a domestic framework for MiCA. So I'll be kind of intrigued to see. It was interesting. The prime minister supported the bill, but the president vetoed it, pretty much saying that it was too complex compared to other EU countries with their implementations of MiCA, and that the bill would risk pushing domestic crypto firms abroad. And I think even one of the CEOs of the largest exchange over in Poland called the legislation a step backwards that risked criminalizing core blockchain development activity, which seems to be something that everybody's fighting against right now.
Well, if you can't get your legislation written appropriately in the amount of time that they've had since the adoption of MiCA to December 30th of 2026 or 2025, maybe you just deserve to get left behind, right? I mean, that's got to be part of this, that some of this is it's not a big enough priority. They aren't taking it seriously enough to pull in the right people to write the legislation correctly. They're not engaged with the industry to make sure that what they write is okay and doable and executable or you know, can even be monitored. Whatever the problems are, they had enough time to figure out all these problems. And if December 30th is their deadline, maybe they just don't meet the deadline, and maybe they just fall behind, and some people are going to fall behind. It's not possible for everybody to tie for first.
Well, it's interesting. So the European Commission is considering proposals to centralize regulation of crypto exchanges across the entire EU bloc under like a single supervisor, similar to what the US does with the SEC, which would kind of eliminate the need for all these countries to do their own version of it. But if that did happen, it's going to take years to negotiate and then years to implement. So it's just putting EU even farther behind from everybody else if that does happen. So yeah, kind of crazy over there. I thought they were leading, and now it seems to be they are dragging their feet more and more as the more we talk about it.
My opinion is, you know, European government is not that different than any other government. And it's full of people that like to talk and act like they do things and act like they're on it. But when it comes down to like actually signing their name, that changes will be made and it'll impact people's lives, they're very hesitant to do that. So if they say, oh, we're going to put a committee together so that we can have a committee meeting so that the committee meeting can, you know, talk about stuff and then we'll schedule the next committee meeting, that's pretty much what I expect out of them. The only reason they're getting things done is that the crypto industry in general is getting larger and larger, and they're being forced to act. So until they're forced to act, we'll see. But yeah, you're right. If they're trying to do a centralized regulator or put together something that covers Germany and Portugal, Italy, and I mean, you're talking about countries that it's going to be really tough to be like, yep, here's the rules that everybody is okay with. I mean, it's like, in those arguments, they will bring back history from 300 years ago. Oh, Germany's been like this since 1620. When, you know what I mean? Like, that's a brutal negotiation to think about. So, I of course you want this rule to be implemented. This is just like back in 1742. And you do that. It's like, they're crazy, man. So good freaking luck.
Yeah, close to what, 40 countries trying to agree? I mean, good luck on that. So it's hard enough to get 50 states to try to agree on something, which doesn't happen anymore. So that same amount of countries is even more unlikely for anything to happen.
Yeah, but at least in the United States, once you establish that who's in charge of the executive and the legislative branch, they kind of rock forward. Like, it's not like the executive branch or the legislative branch says, hey, let's put a 50 state committee together and come to some consensus on things. It's like, it's all baked in. If Congress got 60 people voting the same way, then it passes, or 60%. And so I'm on board with it's one of the reasons why what we have is better than what they have, which honestly, between the euro and like the the European centralized government doesn't seem to be really kicking. It doesn't seem to be wildly advantageous for any of these countries.
Yeah. So the last other country news I had was Canada. The Canadian Revenue Agency apparently just obtained 2,500 users from Dapper Labs on their second ever probe into crypto tax evasion. I think they did this via a court order. Dapper Labs is the NFT firm behind NDA's Top Shot and CryptoKitties. So what they're saying is that this Canadian Revenue Agency, they have a 35-person team, and they've raked in over $72 million in the past 3 years from crypto tax evaders. Although no criminal charges have been filed since that time. So I'm not sure how it's happening, but apparently they're saying we're getting money, but we're just not filing any charges. So yeah, they're trying to get more information. I think the good news is Dapper Labs only gave them 2,500 versus the 20,000 they asked for, something like that. But bad news is they still gave them the information.
Yeah, I mean, if maybe Canada just doesn't have the capacity to go after 2,500 users and chase them down and like go through the court process. So maybe they're like, hey, we'll settle for you just paying the taxes you're supposed to pay. You know what I mean? Like we can't go after, we can try to go after these guys and get nothing over the next 10 years, or we can just basically break a deal.
Ethereum's hard fork happened last week at Fusaka. Nothing broke. So good news there. What's kind of interesting about Ethereum, it looks like the plan moving forward is to have two major updates per year compared to the one per year they've had for the past 3 or 4 years. So, I mean, that's good for Ethereum that they're able to do two of these major updates, and hopefully that will help continue to improve the Ethereum chain.
Cool.
Prediction markets, let's talk about those. Kalshi had a pretty big announcement. They're going to become CNN's official prediction markets partner. So all the Kalshi data will be integrated across all of CNN's programming and will be used by the newsroom data and production team. So maybe CNN might actually be a little bit more accurate than everybody else here now.
Yeah, I mean, if they stop relying on the stuff they've been using for the last 30 years, then they jump on board, maybe they can improve things. Weird.
Polymarket also had some big news. We've been talking about them coming back to the U.S. They officially rolled out access to user on the wait list on Wednesday of last week. So this is after what the CFTC banned them back in 2022. So they're back.
Fine with me. We're in a gambling culture, and every week after on Monday, I get my social media feed shows me all of the plays in the NFL that were likely performed exclusively to either protect a line or an over under. So, we're just living a gambling world, and so might as well freaking let it rock. I grew up where gambling was isolated heavily. I mean, you had to go to Vegas, or you had to go to a casino and a reservation, or you had to go international. Now it's on everybody's phone, and you can place a bet on whether the next pitch is a ball or a strike.
Yeah. Well, the props bet have helped out the Vegas odd makers so much. They make so much money off that now. MetaMask also had some interesting news with the prediction markets. They are now going to support Polymarket in their wallet, so you can vote or bet on real world events. What's interesting is that if you go to Polymarket directly, it's free of charge. If you do it on the MetaMask app, you pay a 4% fee. So I'm not sure how many people are going to do that just because they want to stay in the MetaMask app, maybe, but I would just download the Polymarket app and do it all in there for free.
Yeah, I mean, 4%, that is a lot to pay, you know, especially when everything's digital automated. The marginal cost of those transactions is close to zero. So yeah, that's a weird number to start at. I'm surprised to hear 4%.
Yeah, me too. So I'll be interested to see if it really takes off. Fanatics, which is one of the largest global sports apparel companies, they just announced on Wednesday of last week too that they're going to have a fan-led prediction market platform. They're partnering with crypto.com to do this. And I feel like we've talked about crypto.com quite a bit because they've partnered with Truth Social and MyPrize and a few others as well. So crypto.com continues to give partnerships with companies on that.
Yeah, I thought crypto.com was dead until couple of weeks ago, we talked about it, and I'm like, oh, they were just a victim of this whole thing. I hadn't made any news, and here we are talking about them again.
Then the other thing, we talked about Nevada doing this here recently. Well, Connecticut, their Consumer Protection Department just ordered Kalshi, Crypto.com, and Robinhood to halt the debt contract offerings to state residents. So they said that the platforms are operating illegal sports wagering without a proper license. I didn't know Connecticut had the same sort of gaming ties that Nevada had, but I guess, this is the way they're moving forward.
You know, the Northeast is kind of ripe for the same type of folks that used to run Vegas. So I'm surprised New Jersey doesn't have a similar thing.
Lighter, which is pretty much one of the leading decentralized perpetuals exchange by volume, they are going to launch their spot trading feature this week. And the first one they're going to do is Ethereum. I know we've talked a lot about Hyperliquid, but in the last 30 days, Lighter has had about $297 billion in volume, where Hyperliquid only had about $250. So it's kind of crazy. Lighter's bigger. Now, it's not that surprising because Lighter pretty much has a zero-fee system, which means that most of your high-frequency traders and market makers are probably going to Lighter, whereas Hyperliquid does not. So,
yeah, that's not for me.
Solana Mobile, we talked about them in the past. They're a subsidiary of Solana Labs. They had just announced that their native token for its mobile device ecosystem will launch at the beginning of next year. I think it's going to start, and then it's going to be SKR, I think. And it's going to start with a total of 10 billion tokens, and our total supply will be that. So 30% of those tokens have been earmarked for airdrops and unlocks. So we had kind of a craze when Saga phone came out, and the next one will have another airdrop, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, keep trying these things. I feel like that Solana phone had some success, but we don't talk about it much. Like, I just keep trying stuff like this. Something will stick.
Binance was in the news, too. They just had one of the co-founders, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but she was appointed as the co-CEO. Her prior role was chief customer service officer. So now Richard Tang, who was the old CEO, is now the co-CEO with her. That exchange is closing in on 300 million users, which is kind of impressive.
300 million users is definitely impressive.
Yeah.
I'm old enough to remember when Facebook had 300 million users.
Yeah. So CZ, of course, congratulated her on X. What's interesting, and I didn't know the background, is he kind of said she should have been CEO from day one, and how he's a very strong leader. It'll be a great journey now they have two strong leaders. Well, if you look at CZ and Yihe, they knew each other back at when they were at OKCoin. So they are now both business and life partners, and they have children together. So it is interesting that CZ isn't allowed to be a part of Binance. His life partner is. Okay. So,
yeah, it's the way it works, man. Like it, stuff like that finds a way to happen, right? CZ's not involved. So
CZ was involved with a debate with Peter Schiff here recently. They were talking about gold versus Bitcoin. I mean, nothing entirely new. It almost seemed to be Peter Schiff was pushing his new tokenized gold platform, that he's tokenizing gold, which CZ kind of agreed that tokenized gold would be way better than regular gold, because you could actually prove it out on where it is, and it's just not interchangeable. I did see that Schiff made a point that Bitcoin buys 40% fewer ounces of gold today than it did 4 years ago. And I went and looked at the chart. It's true. That's very accurate right now, but it's like the only time period of ever that you could say that happened is like happening right now. So if you look past any time past 4 years ago, you would never want to own gold. You would want to own Bitcoin. But because of the little hiccup here recently, gold's gone up, Bitcoin's kind of come down a little bit. Gold buys a little bit more Bitcoin, or a little less Bitcoin, right? So, yeah, it's kind of funny to see. But, yeah, if you go look at that chart, you're going to be like, why would I ever own gold?
No, gold's been cherry-picking the data lately. I've seen a lot of that. Like, gold has beat the S&P 500 since 1990 and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, but if you go back 12 months, then it is awful. It's like you're relying on this jump to freaking 4,000. Like, Yeah, if you held it for 30 years, you would be miserable for 29 and a half years. Then you'd be like, oh, great, it worked. Like, nobody's doing that. So I think I didn't listen to that debate. I heard that Peter Schiff, because Peter Schiff's grounded as he is, you know, that's he can win a debate, but he makes a lot of valid points, and especially because the Bitcoin gold people are on mostly the same side. The thing about a tokenized gold cryptocurrency or whatever, you're still relying on somebody to receive the gold, store the gold, verify that the gold is pure all the way through the bar, not just, you know, a tungsten covered gold bar that JP Morgan had. And, you know, that's not something you have to do with Bitcoin. Bitcoin, the ledger, check it, says, yep, this Bitcoin was either mined or it's previously mined and it's been used as Bitcoin. And there's no fraudulent Bitcoin in the system, and it's verified by thousands, 10,000 plus nodes. So it's just way freaking easier to deal with Bitcoin. So why don't you just like start loosening up to that fact?
Well, I think I read somewhere that CZ gave him a gold bar and said, tell me if this is real or not.
Right? He said, I can't.
Yeah. He's like, no, no crap. You know, you have to melt it down and figure it out, right? So it's like,
and then yeah, as soon as you pour it back into a gold and you stamp it 99.99% pure, the next person has to melt it down to prove that it's gold too. Like, this is not how it works, guys.
Yeah, so kind of hilarious, but oh well. Ledger was in the news here recently too. So they demonstrated that you could use electromagnetic fault injection to compromise a MediaTek smartphone chip. So that if you wouldn't actually need, or I think you wouldn't need physical address, but you could kind of take the private keys from the smartphones. So I don't know if that is the same chipset that's on the Solana phones, but I mean, MediaTek is a very large company, kind of compete with Qualcomm and a lot of these chipsets, right? So I would say be careful about some of the Chinese-based smartphones, because I have a feeling they're using a lot of the MediaTek chip. And granted, someone has to take your phone to get this, but really, at the end of the day, just don't store your private keys on a phone. It's the simple thing to do.
Yeah, phones, you want some walking around money, like use it like a wallet, like an actual hard wallet with cash in it. If somebody steals your wallet, yeah, it sucks, but you don't lose your whole percentage points of your net worth. So yeah, use your phone appropriately for the amount of security that it provides.
And then I saw Kwan was in the news here recently. We talked about this, I think, a little bit last week. But Trump's DOJ, which has really been known for their leniency with crypto founders and companies, is seeking the maximum sentence of 12 years in prison for Doquan. So kind of interesting to see that.
Yeah, I mean, we had heard about Doquan in a while, but okay. I mean, that's not a big deal for me anymore.
I pay a ton of attention to the ZK proofs, right, and all that stuff going on. ZK Sync just got announced on Sunday that it's going to depreciate ZK Sync Lite, which is the original zero knowledge rollup that was launched on Ethereum in 2020. They're going to do it at some point next year. I was worried a little bit about this, but in reality, it's not that big a deal. It was kind of planned. It was going to be a sunset for the system that it served its purpose. It doesn't affect any other ZK Sync systems. They're going to share more details in the coming year, but they have kind of improved it, and it's moving on, and zero knowledge is here to stay. It's kind of the main thing to take away from this.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it is, but again, you're the only person I know that talks about it. I mean, I don't talk to Bitcoin about a lot of people either, but like, I don't hear about the zero knowledge proofs from anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be one of those technologies that changes a lot of what we do in the future, and it's still pretty new. But
yeah,
and this is probably stuff you don't really care much about, but Farcaster, they are planning to shift their development efforts in the future to its wallet app. So they used to be kind of this social media service, and they have really kind of failed to achieve any sort of sustainable growth from the last 4.5 years of their social app. So they're seeing good things happen with their wallet, and they're going to focus on that. So not a big surprise there, but kind of interesting reading that.
Yeah, oh, cool. I'll listen to you talk about that if it pops up again.
And then BitTensor, I know you probably haven't paid too much attention to this, but they're kind of this open network and the intersection of almost AI and crypto. you can contribute intelligence into their AI systems and then get paid back in their TAO token. They're actually very similar setup to Bitcoin's halving type of schedule. They're just doing it a lot faster than what Bitcoin's doing, but their first halving event is expected to take place on the 14th of December. So coming up soon. So kind of intrigued to see how that goes. And I do think it's a really cool project, and what they're doing with AI, kind of open sourcing it, allow anybody to have it, is way better than keeping it all underneath all the big tech companies and they don't tell anybody what they're doing. So I hope that it continues to grow, and I think it'll be a big thing for us giving fair access to AI moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, intersection of crypto and AI seems ripe. I don't know enough about it to say much of.
I did see one other thing with Kraken too. Maybe it's something for all of us to strive towards. They're going to offer VIP access to extraordinary experiences. Like, talk about Formula One, football, cultural events, regional meetups, and things like that that aren't available to the general public. In order to be a part of this, you have to have a $10 million average balance on the platform or $80 million in annual trading volume. So I'm not sure how many people they have doing that, but it sounds like it'd be fun.
Yeah, I'm going to let you just keep rolling on this stuff.
Elon Musk was in the news here recently, too, that talking about Bitcoin, which is kind of interesting because he described it as a fundamentally physics-based currency grounded in energy. And what he talked about was that energy is the true currency, and that it's why he said Bitcoin is based on energy and you can't legislate energy. He's like, you can't just pass a law and suddenly have a lot of energy. And it was kind of an intriguing conversation that I liked hearing, right? And I think it's one of the hallmarks of Bitcoin is energy is what determines the value and kind of the footprint and all that kind of stuff. So interesting concept. I'm kind of intrigued to dig more into this in the future, Tim.
Yeah, so I'm helping some companies here and talking to them. And I was helping a new entrepreneur go from kind of a abstract and like basically legal healthcare kind of stuff where the rubber meets the road at the physician level and the nurse level, but in the administrative level, you can just make mistakes. Like if you're an attorney, you just kind of talk around anything. I mean, you kind of mess this up, you got to talk about it. And I'm like, and he's going to become more of a brick and mortar entrepreneur. And I'm like, hey, just a heads up, the rubber meets the road. Like you can't, if you mess up with a customer, you can't talk around like, oh, well, this is why. And they don't care. You screwed up, you got to fix it. And Elon talked about these electrons. It's exactly right, man. You can't bullshit an electron. Like it's either there and available for use when it needs to be, or it's not. And, you know, there's not like when you flip your light switch, there's not a bunch of electrons that have just been waiting there since you turned it off. Right, it's a constant flow, steady stream coming out of turbines that has to meet the demand within a certain tolerance. If it's too high, you're blowing up transformers, and if it's too low, you're getting brownouts. It's crazy difficult to do, and when you have all these people that have all these jobs where there's never any consequences, start meddling in the industries where there's consequences. You know, it's like, okay, well, let's just see what happens. Right, like you don't want to hire the right people. You don't want to hire people because you're replacing some of these older guys that are aging out. You can't just not do anything. Like you can't just not have the right number of electrons flowing through the lines. It has to be right, or you don't have electricity. So there's no bullshitting the power grid. So Elon's right, and he knows it. I mean, he makes stuff. He's got billion-dollar companies that do things that matter. He doesn't have a hedge fund, right?
Yeah.
Rockets either blow up or they go into space. Tunnels are either drilled or they're not. Neuralink either allows quadriplegics to control computer screens or it doesn't. I mean, out of a lot of respect for Elon Musk, he actually gets stuff done that does something in the real world. Like you look at some of the richest people out there. I mean, like, Bezos, great man. You created Amazon, which basically took brick and mortar retail online. Neat. Amazon's like a week out on deliveries right now, even though I pay for 2-day shipping, right? So no consequences. The spaceship doesn't blow up, right? You know, nobody's suffocating underground because the tunnels don't work So, you know, a lot of these companies, a lot of these wealthy people just don't have, they built their wealth on inconsequential industries. And, you know, the power industry is not one of those industries.
No, that's very true. All right, well, I got one last thing to end on, and it's NFT related, which we haven't talked about those in quite some time.
Yeah.
If you remember Beeple, who created that, what, $69 million NFT? Well, he just created some robot dogs that poop NFTs. So they're a four-legged robot dog. They have a sculptured silicon head based on figures from the worlds of art and tech. So you got Elon Musk, Zuck, Bezos, Picasso, Warhol, even Beeple himself. And they walk around, take pictures, and literally poop out NFTs. And they're going to do it for 3 years and then be done. So it's kind of hilarious to watch. And that's just something fun to see about NFTs.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about art and artists. Like, I kind of like this one. Like, some people like it, some people don't like it. It's art. So maybe it'll be valuable, maybe it won't be. It's art. He does not make it to make money. He's an artist, right? Like, this, that, maybe it's valuable, maybe it's not. It's a thing. I saw a video of it, and it's pretty entertaining, to be honest.
Yeah, it sold out within a very short amount of time because everybody wanted to see it. So good for him.
Yeah.
What else did I miss?
So we talked about almost every country that we probably ever talked about. We talked about Bitcoin and we talked about all those crypto. So coming all the way back around to the United States and Bitcoin. So I talked to a guy this week. I was helping another guy with business. Anyway, he introduced me to this guy's got like a whole mining operation, like warehouse full of miners, air-cooled miners. He's doing a new one that's going to be immersion mining. I didn't have a ton of time because I was finishing up one meeting and I was going to grab lunch with somebody else. And it was really a handshake and a little chat. But it's not a coincidence that like I'm running into Bitcoin people. There's just more Bitcoin people out there. And so it's kind of super neat. I told him, I'm like, listen, I've been in the power industry for a long time. I'm into Bitcoin for a long time. I've done some small little hobby mining stuff. I'm like, man, anytime you want to talk, we got a lot to talk about. Like, I'd be all about it. So it's just interesting to me to meet somebody that's into Bitcoin that's kind of wrapping his, you know, industry, his entrepreneurial endeavors around it. And that's the first time I've ever done that. So put that on the list of like, maybe that matters more than some of the stories about Western Union may or may not be doing this or like, through my Bitcoin. People know that I'm into Bitcoin, so I got introduced to this guy, but I happened to meet him coincidentally. I didn't know he was in town. I happened to be at the same coffee shop at the same time. There's enough people out there that I'm bumping into people that own Bitcoin mining operations. That's something that I think that help my bullish thesis feel better about it. And so that was neat. It's rare that, you know, I'm bumping to people that are curious about Bitcoin. I rarely bump to people that have, you know, I don't know how many megawatts of miners he's got, but it's a warehouse worth, and they make small warehouses too, but miners aren't that big. They don't take up that much room. So if he's even got 1,000 square feet of miners, that would be a lot for somebody that I just happened to shake hands with in person without knowing that I was going to meet them that day. So kind of cool, pretty cool, neat stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. This is a ton of stuff we covered as always lately here. There's a ton of news going on. Super exciting. I mean, the Vanguard and Bank of America stuff is going to be interesting to see how it plays out over the next months to quarters to years. All right. But yeah, still very optimistic about the future of crypto and Bitcoin.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, we will talk again next week. Thanks, Al.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.